All right, Wrestling with Theology fans, this is Pastor Doug Minton here with you to dig a little deeper into the book of Deuteronomy as we look at Deuteronomy chapter 10 this week. And really, two sections here. The first of Moses telling about after having broken the tablets of stone that God gave him, that having to make that second tablet so God could give the covenant from Sinai once again. And then a reminder that the circumcision that God looks for is not only the circumcision of the flesh, but more importantly, the circumcision of the heart. So we have both of those going on this week as we dig into Deuteronomy. So let's look at the text real quick. Deuteronomy chapter 10. At that time the Lord said to me, "Cut for yourself two tablets of stone like the first, and come up to me on the mountain and make an ark of wood. And I will write on the tablets the words that were on the first tablets that you broke, and you shall put them in the ark." So I made an ark of acacia wood, and cut two tablets of stone like the first, and went up the mountain with the two tablets in my hand. And he wrote on the two tablets, in the same writing as before, the Ten Commandments that the Lord had spoken to you on the mountain out of the midst of the fire on the day of the assembly. And the Lord gave them to me. Then I turned and came down from the mountain and put the tablets in the ark that I had made, and there they are, as the Lord commanded me. The people of Israel journeyed from Beeroth Benijakin to Moserah. There Aaron died, and there he was buried. And his son Eleazar ministered as priest in his stead. From there they journeyed to Gedgoda, and from Gedgoda to Jotbatha, a land of brooks of water. At that time the Lord set apart the tribe of Levi to carry the ark of the covenant of the Lord, to stand before the Lord, to minister to him, and to bless in his name to this day. Therefore Levi has no portion or inheritance with his brothers. The Lord is his inheritance, as the Lord your God said to him. I myself stayed on the mountain, as at the first time, 40 days and 40 nights, and the Lord listened to me that time also. The Lord was unwilling to destroy you. And the Lord said to me, "Arise, go on your journey at the head of the people, so that they may go in and possess the land which I swore to their fathers to give them. And now, Israel, what does the Lord your God require of you? But to fear the Lord your God, to walk in all his ways, to love him, to serve the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul, and to keep the commandments and statutes of the Lord, which I am commanding you today for your good. Behold, to the Lord your God belong heaven and the heaven of heavens, the earth with all that is in it. Yet the Lord set his heart and love on your fathers and chose their offspring after them, you above all peoples, as you are this day. Circumcise therefore the foreskin of your heart and be no longer stubborn. For the Lord your God is God of gods and Lord of lords, the great, the mighty, and the awesome God, who is not partial and takes no bribe. He executes justice for the fatherless and the widow, and loves the sojourner, giving him food and clothing. Love the sojourner, therefore, for you were sojourners in the land of Egypt. You shall fear the Lord your God. You shall serve him and hold fast to him, and by his name you shall swear. He is your praise. He is your God, who has done for you these great and terrifying things that your eyes have seen. Your fathers went down to Egypt 70 persons, and now the Lord your God has made you as numerous as the stars of heaven." All right, there is Deuteronomy chapter 10. So as I said, the first few verses have that story of Moses having, first of all, made the Ark of the Covenant, and then carving out the new tablets of stone so that God would write once again the Ten Commandments on them. So that's what's happening in the first five verses here. As Dr. Harstad said, because Yahweh accepted the interceding of Moses at Horeb or Sinai, he did not divorce his people with whom he had made a covenant. The proof is that Yahweh once again writes the 10 words on the two blank tablets of stone and gives them to Moses. The second written edition of the 10 words is just like the first imprint. Yahweh did not add any new commands as a result of the rebellion of the nation. The proper understanding of the two tablets of stone is that both tablets were inscribed with the same text. That is, each tablet holds all 10 words. Both parties of a covenant in ancient times kept matching copies of the agreement as testimony of the pact. Because the ark will be visible means by which Yahweh dwells in the midst of his people, both tablets, his and Israel's, will rest in the Ark of the Covenant. So here's one I hadn't really considered before. I'm used to all the depictions of the Ten Commandments having the different commandments on each one, whether it's the five and five of just breaking them up by halves, or the three and seven of the first table and second table, according to the Lutheran understanding, or four and six, dividing the two tables according to the Reformed understanding. Either way, I'd always thought of the two tablets of stone, you know, being broken up, having the Ten Commandments split between them. But it's an interesting idea, especially with ancient Near East practice of covenants, that, you know, both tablets would have all Ten Commandments on there. So it's an interesting idea and really fits with the understanding of covenant in the ancient Near East, especially as Israel would come to know it through their history in the Promised Land. Aside from that idea, Dr. Harstad also gives the notice that it's the same 10 words. God doesn't add any new commandments because of the Golden Calf incident. The Golden Calf incident is simply the breaking of that original covenant, but it's the same exact covenant that is given the second time. There's no alterations that God makes like we would make with the results of the things that have happened before. We always want to change things because of the way people have treated us. God does not work that way. God sends them on. He says to send the people out. So verses 6 through 9 have the whole story of their going really between the Mount Sinai and the leaving at the end of Exodus to where they get to the place where they send the spies out. And he makes the very strong understanding of setting apart the Levites at this time. The Levites weren't necessarily set apart specifically in the beginning at Horeb, but it is after Aaron's death that God sets apart the Levites. So before this section of the journeys, before Aaron's death, it was strictly Aaron doing these things as the high priest. And from then on, God breaks it out. Eleazar continues on as high priest in his father's stead, but the rest of the Levites get their marching orders as to how they go on in the worship life of Israel. So we have the three functions that the Levites are given in this time. First, they carry the tabernacle furniture. Whenever they went from one place to the next, it was the Levites who were in charge of carrying the tabernacle, the post, the altar, all the things that went around with the tabernacle, as we discussed when we went through the book of Exodus at the beginning of this podcast, now almost 6 years ago. I guess that those episodes would be about 5 years ago. But, you know, we went through all of those things. It was the Levites' responsibility to carry all of those items. Secondly, they represented the people of God to God by offering sacrifices and by prayer. The same thing the pastors do nowadays. We have this still going on in our worship today, is that the pastor shows up and represents the people in God's presence. And then the third, they also do the opposite. They represent God to the people, particularly by pronouncing the blessing that he gives them in Numbers 6. The Lord spoke to Moses, saying, "Speak to Aaron and his sons, saying, 'Thus shall you bless the people of Israel. You shall say to them, the Lord bless you and keep you. The Lord make his face to shine upon you and be gracious to you. The Lord lift up his countenance upon you and give you peace.' So shall they put my name upon the people of Israel, and I will bless them." Ultimately, this is the biggest thing that the Levites were to do. This is the biggest thing that pastors do, is to declare the word of God. Not only the blessing, which is what we crave, is we want just the blessing. Just give me the gospel and don't worry about anything else. But we also have to remember, we need the law. because the gospel means nothing without the law. So we have this parenthetical statement between verses 6 through 9, but then when we get to verse 10, we're back with the first five verses again, that Moses stayed up on the mountain another 40 days and another 40 nights after the golden calf, again being told the same thing, again God relenting on his desire to destroy the people and start over again with Moses. And Moses comes back to remind the people that, remember, this is God we're talking about here. He owns heaven and earth. He owns the heavens and everything that's in the earth. And he is the one who has chosen you. He has set his heart and love on you and your fathers. Chose you above all peoples. This is the great love that God has. This is the great mercy that is shown by the God of gods and the Lord of lords, as we have here, but also especially in Revelation. So then we talk about this Lord of lords and God of gods and what he wants and expects of his people. So that's verse 16. Circumcise therefore the foreskin of your heart and be no longer stubborn. This is the big thing. Paul reminds us in Romans 2, for no Jew is a Jew who is merely one outwardly, nor is circumcision outward and physical, but a Jew is one inwardly, and circumcision is a matter of the heart by the Spirit, not by the letter. His praise is not from man, but from God. Dr. Harstead points out that there is no physical circumcision during the wilderness wanderings. When we get to Joshua 5, before the battle of Jericho, everybody is circumcised, one mass circumcision, and then it starts up as they are in the promised land. But the physical circumcision was a sign of the unconditional covenant with Abraham of pure grace. You know, this was a sign of the covenant that had been given to him decades earlier. So we have this great moment where it's not just, okay, the circumcision of the flesh, that's, you know, we do the things outwardly, but no, this is something that cuts us deeply to the core. And we do this because, verse 17, the Lord your God is God of gods and Lord of lords, the great, the mighty, and the awesome God, who is not partial and takes no bribe. So we have here again, in Revelation 17 and 19, we have Jesus, the Lamb, being called the King of Kings and Lord of Lords. Paul says the same thing to Timothy in 1 Timothy 6:15. He who is the blessed and only sovereign, the King of Kings and Lord of Lords. This is the one who does not take a bribe, is not looking at what you can give him, but is completely all about the grace and mercy that he gives you. Because he is the one who executes justice for the fatherless and the widow. He is the one who loves the sojourner and tells us to do the same. He finishes up the chapter here in verse 22, reminding the people of his love for their ancestors. Your fathers went down to Egypt 70 persons. And now the Lord your God has made you as numerous as the stars of heaven. This dates all the way back to Genesis 15:5, where God promises that his seed, the seed of Abram, would be like the stars of heaven. You know, massively multiplying throughout the generations. And yet, he's also talking in that covenant about the one seed. The singular seed who is lifted up on the cross for the sins of all. He is the one who has promised to produce all of these seeds. Not just the physical descendants of Abram that were very numerous, even in the wilderness wanderings, but the numerous people who would come from all nations, from all the families of the earth, where God is praised through Jesus Christ. It is through him that we have it. As Paul writes to the Galatians in chapter 3, verse 16. Now the promises were made to Abraham and to his offspring. It does not say and to offsprings, referring to many, but referring to one, and to your offspring, who is Christ. This is the one seed that God is most concerned about, because it is this seed that brings about the multitude of fruit that we see in the Christian church today. The multitude of all the faithful who call upon Him, who give Him their praise, because He is our praise, as verse 21 reminds us. He is our God, who has done for us these great and terrifying things. What was great and terrifying? Well, for the Israelites, there was all the plagues in Egypt. There was the crossing of the Red Sea. Later on would be the crossing of the Jordan. But ultimately, it's Him suffering His passion, going through the betrayal, the arrest, the denials, the beating, the mocking, and ultimately the crucifixion and death. Those are the great and terrifying things that God has done for you. He has done them because He loves you, because He has set that love on you. Not because of anything in you, but because of His promise. Dating to Abraham, dating back all the way to Adam and Eve, of the promised one who would crush the serpent's head, who would end all the sorrow and struggle of this world, giving us paradise once again. That's what we look forward to. That's what Abram looked forward to. That's what Moses looked forward to, and what he's encouraging the Israelites getting ready to go into the promised land, that this is a foreshadowing of that great thing. All right, that is it for this week. We're going to wrap up here, go into Deuteronomy chapter 11 next week. I encourage you to be back so that we can continue to be strengthened, to have God's love shown upon us as we dig deeper into His Word. This is Pastor Doug Minton, thanking you for being here, supporting the podcast. I encourage you to share it with your friends and family. Let them join us as we continue to dig deeper, as we continue to strengthen and equip ourselves so that we can wrestle with the theology around us today and always. Amen.